How many baseball fans in the room? And then watch the drama that unfolded last night in the World Series. You've got the pitcher Harvey pitches 8 innings of no score. Not quite a no-hitter, but the Mets win it, and I'm a lifelong Mets fan, being from New Jersey. It's amazing that I made it here this morning. 2-0 going into the ninth inning. You have drama playing out in the dugout where the manager has told Harvey, great game, you're done. Harvey pushes back, says, no, I want to finish it. And we know what happens. He goes in. Within a few pitches, the Royals are only down 2-1. Harvey gets taken out, and the Mets end up losing 7-2. And it was a really tough night for us New Jersey New Yorkers. But what happened? RCCHC was Harvey. RCCHC has done tremendous work in the community for years in remote patient monitoring. And the private partnership, the private-public partnership that we have formed, is we came in the ninth inning and helped them to extend this program throughout North Carolina and nationally. And so, to me, it's a great example of sometimes you know your capabilities and you rely on others. And it has been an absolutely wonderful relationship. Kim Swartz, the CEO, is actually out of the country, so she asked me to pinch hit. Sorry for the baseball analogies. And so I've offered to do that. And she did ask me to... actually, this will be the only part I agreed because she wanted me to get this absolutely right. So RCCHC is a BD, Direct Relief, NACHC, Building Healthy Communities 2014 awardee, and is currently being sponsored by BD, representing SafetyNet Healthcare Providers and the IHI Leadership Alliance, to transform the conversation around the now important quad aim, better care, better health, affordable costs with joy, meaning, and healing. So let's dive in. And I do have to give the obligatory disclosure. Yes, I am a for-profit entity. We are the private part of the private-public partnership. And we, together, are working on industry-sponsored grants, such as programs like BD. The fact that I come from the for-profit sector actually is extraordinarily relevant. Because back when we were investigating whether or not to work with RCCHC, to even see if there was a business model, I went and visited their clinic in North Carolina, in FQHC. This is just one of many, many stories that we saw when we were down there. It's a very, very economically depressed area. And as I listened to find the business case, my heart was soon captured by stories such as Tamara. And this is not her actual picture, but this is a likeness of her. Tamara was in her mid-30s. She had 2 children. And she was living as a shut-in. Among her multimodal chronic diseases was hypertension, diabetes, CHF, and in her mid-30s, literally, would scarcely leave the house. Her husband is a police officer in the community, and when he went on duty, he would have his fellow police officers come and check on his wife. Tamara was one of the first entrants into the telehealth program that I'm about to talk to you about. And I saw her on the outside. I saw her when she came through the program and the life and light that she brought to the room and the fact that she not only was no longer a shut-in, but became a productive member of her community. She led her children's choir. She was coaching her children's team. She was reaching out to others in the community. Was that which convinced me that this program, this telehealth program that we're about to talk about, wasn't just a good idea. It was absolutely critical. It's absolutely essential. So let's talk context. RCCHC serves the northeast corner of North Carolina, one of the poorest, hardest hit regions in the country. You see the health disparities and the barriers to care, but look at the population, over 21% uninsured. This is pre-ACA, with medium income below the poverty line and over 70% African American. This is where care is needed most. She has built, through grant, really a beacon in North Carolina. When she began this program, this did not exist. They literally met in trailers, in a trailer park. And this is really as a result of her hard work and determination, and frankly, some of the outcomes that I'm about to show you gave grantees and the confidence and the ability to fund a program like this because of the efficacy. So I'm a big fan of Simon Sinek. Start with why. Simon Sinek, in his leadership book, says that the best way to compel audiences is not to begin with the what, but to begin with the why. Help understand what is at the core of what you're doing, and from why go to how, and then finally talk about the what. Well, The why is something that speaks to me personally. Again, I'm a first generation American. My parents are both from Guyana, South America. My mom is a RN and did her schooling in London. This is during the days of she was a midwife and literally went house to house delivering babies and caring for young mothers. What telehealth is effectively doing is trying to bring back the days of the house call, but using technology to do that. So here we have a doctor who is located within the clinic reaching out to a patient who is, in this case, about 43, 44 miles away, but driving that high-touch, high-tech connection through the use of technology. It's not about the technology. It's about fostering the relationship. So how does it work? This shows just the progression from left to right. A series of medical devices are deployed into the homes, and there are many, many companies that deploy. We actually don't have our own. We partner with device companies to bring everything from glucometers to weight scales to make sure that each individual has a personal device that measures just their particular vitals every single day. And one of the key things about these devices is that the devices automatically send their vitals to the network. So we're not relying on individual self-reporting because we've seen that has not been tremendously reliable. So that data is sent securely every single day. And the nurses at RCCHC receive that information. There's a plan of care that's set up for each individual person, and so they can very quickly see whether or not those individuals fall within the acceptable range. We found that if we only reached out to them when there was a problem, when we saw that they went outside of the range, the relationship wasn't what we wanted to, because we effectively became big brother. We saw that your weight has increased by several pounds the last few days. You must be retaining water. We saw that your diabetes is way too high, and the relationship wasn't there. So we said, regardless of whether or not individuals were outside of range, we're going to reach out to them and build a relationship. So several times a week, whether or not their values are out of range or within range, we're working with them, getting to know them, understanding their habits, understanding their likes and dislikes. And in many cases, we're working on education. Right? It's the literacy component that we find is oftentimes generational. Not only do they not know how to care for themselves, their parents don't know how to care for themselves. And so when they have children, it just propagates, much as like we just heard from Lisa. So the methodology gets to the fact that we realized in order for this to be scalable, we really had to work through and put a very deliberate model in place. And each one of these triangles, you can double click and there's a whole series of processes. I won't go through that, but everything from, and I'm sorry for the colors, the bottom left, discovery. So let's ensure that we have individuals who are properly suited for the program, and we'll talk about that for a second. But before we rush into any type of deployment, who are these individuals? What are their biases? What is it about them that we think would make them be candidates for this program? Then we go through and identify, you know, in many cases, do they have cell coverage? We have some projects in Oregon where we don't have electricity, and so we have to have a car adapter. So someone goes into the car, turns on the engine every day, puts in the adapter, and takes the measure. So that's part of the process. Let's make sure that they can actually they have a mechanism by which they can take the vitals. We then identify what products that we want, and then the pinnacle, and we'll talk about this as a challenge, is engaging both the patients and the providers. Okay, doing the discovery, matching the equipment is one thing, but are they actually sending their vitals, and do we have the PCPs connected? And again, I'll talk about that in a second, but that really is upon which this entire program, the success rises or fails. Once we see that they're engaged, sustaining, okay, not just managing their vitals, but educating them, and making sure that they are progressing in their knowledge of their chronic disease and how to treat it, and then the ongoing clinical support to make sure that we have the nurses and the PCPs involved, and then the reporting. And that provides a feedback loop. So every individual that we go through the program, we're constantly, how do we learn and how do we take those lessons learned and refine the model going forward? So what is it that we measure? And you see here everything from psychographic and demographic information, so the patients, how satisfied were they, obviously clinical indicators representing diabetes, COPD, CHF. Are they actually using the services in their community? And we found that because of access and other reasons, there are many things that were available to them that they weren't taking advantage of. And so we wanted to see what services they were using and then capturing their costs. And by measuring that, to be able to see whether or not we're able to impact costs in a short period of time. Sure.
So were all these patients in a single health system? You were able to measure how successful they were?
Great, great question. So for this study, it was in a particular health system, and so we were able to capture it. And so you'll see that the results that we had here, there's actually a clinical trial where the results were validated by Wake Forest. And so this was a situation that we were able to get that information. And as a matter of fact, great question, there's about 200-odd people in the program. We actually can only narrow it down to 64 with certainty, from which we gathered all that information. But it was statistically relevant enough that we felt that there was a, there's a case here, and we have now taken this program and deployed 10 different programs nationwide and have seen very similar results. Yeah, sure. Any other questions? I know I shouldn't ask. Okay. So, again, I talked about two challenges. Challenge number one, which will come as no surprise, is how do you engage the patients? And I wish I could tell you here that there's a magic bullet. There really isn't. Once you build momentum, the momentum is easy to maintain because you can take testimonials, and especially within the community, have community members reach out to one another. So at the beginning of the program, we're frankly looking for people that are excited about something new. They are well aware and tired of their condition. It's individuals who are ripe, and we identify those, and they become the champions. And it may not be many. It may be 3, 4, 5. But right up front, we communicate to them that they are going to be our vanguard. They are going to be the individuals that we will hold up, and they will really need to penetrate the community with the results. And so this shows the process that we go through, the discovery of asking questions, getting to know them, and then again, that patient-centric approach. But in so doing, we see a phenomenally high level of compliance. So by being very deliberate up front, over 94% of individuals, and when we say compliant, we're saying taking their measurements every single day and making sure that those vitals are being sent to the nurses by virtue of making sure the devices are connected. This particular program we're talking about was a 6-month period, but this program started in the mid-2000s, and so we now have people who have been on the program for many, many years, and we see that compliance happens. I mean, what happens is that they form relationships, and that all of a sudden they don't talk about the program, they don't talk about the devices, they talk about Nurse Sally or Dr. Bob, and this is just a way to facilitate that relationship. That's what this is all about. So the patients are one thing. The PCBs, sometimes they're not the easiest to work with. The challenge there is, do I have more information that's coming to me? And if I do receive that information, am I held accountable for it? And I'm already overtaxed. I'm already overloaded. And so really the only way to overcome this is to have doctors speak with doctors. And so we took several of our champions, Dr. Knipe, as well as Dr. Jones, who were in the program. Frankly, both of them were skeptics. But because of the grant, because it was a closed system, they had to go along with it. And so sometimes the best volunteers are those who are coerced. And so as a result of them seeing the amount of data, and the one thing that you'll hear consistently is that now when a patient comes to present themselves, you don't have the white coat syndrome, or I can't remember, I don't know, where everything is fine. You now have weeks, if not months, of data that informs a doctor. So before he or she does a prescription, they actually have a very good history. And that is the key. When the doctors realize that information gives me a holistic picture of that individual, and now I can ask very specific questions about when I see spikes, what happened, and in many times have notes annotated. So we know that there was a particular high blood pressure, but we know that that's when they went on vacation or that's when there was a holiday celebration. That provided a much broader picture that enabled the doctors to very quickly hone in on the situation and provide the best intervention. And, of course, because the nurses are dealing with them on a daily basis sometimes, there is that ongoing care. And so now you have the patients telling the doctors, oh, well, here's what I learned. Here's what I did differently. And I started feeling better here. And so you have a very rich, very robust interaction between patient and provider as a result of this. But again, every time we go into a new community or to a new system, it's getting the doctor speaking to the doctors and letting that's where the magic happens. So what are some of the results? Again, I won't go line by line, but you can see from blood pressure to pulse, the only area that we saw a little bit of increase was in weight. Again, this is a 6-month program. This is 64 individuals. It was hard to get to the bottom of why we saw a weight increase. The one thing we pointed to was perhaps, because one of the things we really coach them on is nutrition. Are they eating better? And so did we actually see, a positive gain because of the increased nutrition? Can't say that convincingly, but the other areas we were able to track very carefully and see the drop, again, in your blood pressure as well as your pulse. The economic results were pretty remarkable. So we measured before we started the program 6 months. We captured data up to 6 months before they went on the program, where there was 200 bed days between these 64 individuals. They visited the ED 27 times and total charges of over $1.3 million. The 6 months that they were on the program, we saw the hospital bed days get cut in half to 100, only five ED visits, and cost down. We took $1 million out of the system. But the real question is, okay, was that only during the course that they were on the program and then they reverted back after they were on the program? And what we saw here is that for the 3 years post-program, we still saw an 83% reduction in bed days, 79 in ER visits, and 87 in costs. And so the total cost of the program was $483,000 versus the $1.3 million during the 6 months of the program. So again, and we have seen this time and time again in a variety of rural, urban, corporate settings to give us confidence in these results. This is just a visualization of that same information. You can see the hospitalizations drop. The blue is the 6 months prior. The red is the 6 months during the program, and the green is the 36 months following. And so you see a dramatic decrease across. This gives you more information that we're gathering on the various outcomes. The patients, again, the visits, the readmissions. We do customer satisfaction. We talk about the relationship. Those are all things that are being monitored, as well as the provider. And so this is information that over time we can compile to help improve the program. And then specifically, how can the mission of RCGHC be expanded? It's leveraging these best practices of public-private partnerships. We have since been successful in getting grants both from HRSA as well as other government agencies who sees the benefit of both the care provider as well as the scalability. Delivering care via a neutral business model, we think it's critical because the technology is changing so rapidly, and we see more and more mobile devices being used. And so making sure you have a platform that regardless of EHR, regardless of devices, can plug in. And then developing broad partnerships. This problem is too big for any one organization to take on. But together, we think it's something that we can tackle. Thank you very much.